Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender. Episode 1.
So we're back.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah. Kin Folklore. Woo. Season 3.
Here we go.
Avatar, The Last Airbender. And so we decided that during this period of uncertainty and anxiety, that we wanted to explore a world that was unlike our own, full of wonder and also pretty fun.
Yeah.
Atla, a series that our friends have been telling us to watch for a really long time. Shout out to my friends who told me about it 10 years ago.
Their persistence is definitely appreciated because we do like it. It's really cool. So
yeah. So it seemed like a perfect project to embark on. Like, it has all of the elements that we were looking for. And then Netflix surprised us. They announced that they would be streaming all 3 seasons starting May 15th. So we're really excited to discuss this animated series with our listeners, and we hope that you enjoy coming along with us on this journey as well.
Yeah, and it's really cool because, you know, the surprise is that you can watch along while we're podcasting about this, like with that announcement. So really, really cool. At first, we were on the Blu-ray tip. So we were like, man, this is really cool that they could do this. And, you know, when we made the announcement at the beginning of the pandemic that we were going to do this in one of our meetups, we said, you know what? It's a kid's show. We're not going to do adult content. And everyone told us that no. Although this was originally a children's show, there's tons of room for adult content. And we had to agree. So just know, as normal, Kin Folklore will be about the adult content. And that if you have children listening, you may want to go ahead and let them out the room at this point.
Not for kids.
No.
Sorry. All right. So in this first episode, we're talking about episodes 1 through 4. So if you haven't watched those episodes yet, go ahead and you should plan on watching the first 4 episodes of book 1. The first episode is called The Boy in the Iceberg. Spoiler alert. It's the Avatar.
He's hanging out. It's an iceberg chilling.
So Katara, who's one of our main characters, has a voiceover that gives us a brief history of the old world order before the events of our story. The Avatar kept the balance between the water tribes, the earth kingdom, fire nation, and the air nomads. Only the Avatar could master all of the elements. But all that changed 100 years ago when the Avatar disappeared and the fire nation began to attack and take over the world. Katara's father and the other men of the tribe left 2 years ago to travel to the Earth Kingdom to help fight the Fire Nation, leaving her and her brother Sokka to take care of their village. And Sokka takes that responsibility super seriously.
Yeah, and he's not very good at it. Like, he's struggling out here. He's, you know,
he's trying. He's doing his best.
He is.
So the two of them are on a fishing trip when we learn that Katara is a waterbender, and she's, you know, trying to catch a fish using waterbending while Sokka is using a more traditional means of catching fish. Mm-hmm. And then in what has got to be one of my all-time favorite feminist rants.
It's good. It's really good.
Katara tells her brother off. He's clearly jealous that she's a waterbender, and she just goes off. It's an epic rant. She flat out calls him a sexist, which surprised me.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. I was taken aback.
Yeah, it was good. She's like, listen, this is, you know, and I didn't, I don't understand what happened to him. He got the short end of this stick. How is she a waterbender? He has no powers, no discernible powers. Like, what happened?
Well, she's the only waterbender in her entire tribe.
Yeah, it's
which
true. She's special.
I find. I mean, currently, you know, some of the tribe is off doing on a mission, but at the time, she's the only waterbender in the South Pole. So yes, Sokka doesn't have waterbending skills, but he has other skills.
Yeah, he has other skills.
So during her epic clapback,
yeah,
paired with her bending skills,
yeah,
her power and energy reverberates through the water and breaks a giant iceberg that is near them.
Good move. I like it. I like it. And I like that they're making her so strong, like, early on in the series. Like, it right away, you know that she's important. It's super fun to see. I mean, both of them are, but, like, right away, you're like, oh, okay, she's important in the story, you know?
Like many a feminist knows, our rage powers us.
It's true.
It's what gives us our energy.
Yeah,
we need it. So in this iceberg, they find a young airbender named Aang, who emerges from a burst of light with his flying bison Appa.
Cute little guy, cute big guy. I love Appa. Oh my gosh, so fluffy.
Appa's so great in this episode, particularly because. Yeah. He's like, man, I just spent like 100 years in an iceberg. Leave me alone.
Oh, man, he's great. I love Appa. I mean, he and you know, this isn't a spoiler. If you've been watching it, he saves them quite a bit throughout this show. Like, he's always saving their butts. You know what I mean? So it's really cool.
So the light that is created when Aang is revealed is seen pretty far away as well by a young man we will come to know is Prince Zuko.
This fucking guy. Oh,
of the Fire Nation, who is traveling with his uncle, Iroh.
Yeah.
Zuko is a classic brat.
Brat is a nice word.
He's a brat. Let's just go with brat for now.
Okay.
Cool. His uncle's like quietly playing cards, and Zuko's like, oh, the avatar. What's that? We must find the avatar. Mm-hmm. So we learn that for generations, Zuko's family, his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather have all been searching for the avatar, and they have failed. Zuko says, and we'll hear this a lot from him, that his honor depends on finding the avatar.
Oh, his honor. Oh, my honor depends. I'm honor bound. I need honor. His honor all the time. This guy has like an ounce, like maybe a shred of honor. Not that much honor. He's terrible.
He's pretty rough in this. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say, like, off the bat, I was like, this kid is insufferable.
Terrible. And his scar looks like a birthmark. Like, I don't understand. Like, everybody's talking about a scar. I'm like, man, you gotta... Anyway, it's like, it's not that bad. It's really not anything you should be that bitter about. It's actually cool. It brings out character. It's all right.
It's true. It does give him some street cred. He gets a little 100%. Street cred.
100%. He's like all bent out of shape about it.
So, back at the iceberg, Aang makes quick friends with his new companions, and he seems like he's got a little crush on Katara. Like a little...
I mean, just a tiny one. It's just a little tiny bit. Little something.
She's a little bit older, but, you know, that won't matter.
Let's call it. He is totally, totally ignoring anyone else. Everything is to impress her. And this is a theme that continues. Like, right? Like, he's like, Sokka, yeah, whatever. And he's, like, straight up trying to impress her from the beginning. The very beginning. So it's really, really... Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, so we're going to keep an eye on that. We're going to keep an eye.
Yeah.
They end up going back to the village, and after a night of dreams, in which we sort of see the vision that might explain how Aang ended up in the iceberg to begin with, he wakes up to meet all of the folks of the Southern Water Tribe. He also learns that his people, the Airbenders, are extinct. No one has seen any Airbenders in 100 years. And he learns about the war between the Fire Nation and the rest of the world, too. So Aang takes a lot in.
Yeah.
He's 12 years old.
Yeah.
So hearing that you're 12 years old and your people have been entirely wiped out and that there's a war going on has got to be pretty rough.
Yeah, really rough. It's super tough, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, right, my first impression was that these kids are... living through a really traumatic time. I mean, in the very next scene, Sokka is out here trying to train these little kids.
Just in case, because that's all that they have left. It's him and these little kids, and that's who they're, you know, they're trying to get ready in case there's another invasion, which lets you know how devastating the invasions have been, that all of the able-bodied warriors have left, you know, so to go and in search of trying to fight, you know, other battles. So it's intense.
Yeah.
Fire Nation's winning. They're winning right now, the Fire Nation.
Yeah, it sure does seem like it, and mm-hmm. everyone's really afraid of them. So he's training these little boys to be warriors. He's not a very good teacher. Immediately, they're like, we have to go to the bathroom. He starts ranting. It's not good. No classroom management skills. no classroom management skills at all.
He's struggling. He's struggling. His facial expressions say it all. Like, he's really, really struggling to get these kids, you know, motivated. And he's, you know, and in fairness to him, he's doing his part. He's trying his best anyway to do his part. And these kids are just like, they're kids. They want to play. They want to have a good time. They're not really worried about fighting, you know? So.
Yeah. It's a big responsibility for him and Katara, but also for the kids of the village.
Mm-hmm.
So while Sokka is doing this, Aang and Katara want to get to know each other a little bit. So mm-hmm. they spend some time exploring the island, and Katara says that she wants Aang to teach her how to bend. He says that he doesn't know how to bend. He's an airbender. I mean, he doesn't know how to do water bending. He's an airbender. But he promises to take her on Appa to the North Pole, where she can find the other water tribe and get a master who can teach her water bending.
Like, big flex by Aang. He's like, hey, you know what? I don't know, but let's go to the North Pole on the back of my flying bison. You know what? That impresses the ladies, Aang. I'm just saying. It's a good call. A good call. Like, I like it. It's
yeah, really awesome. I will say that Aang's strongest game is in this first episode.
Yeah.
Then the game gets weak. But he starts out strong.
Starts strong.
He's listening to her concerns. You know, he wants to help her out. He flexes with his flying bison. Good job, Aang.
I mean, here's the thing, though. If you had 100 years to think about what you might say to a lady, should you like her, is it strong game or is it just really good pre-planning? I mean, he had 100 years to come up with his first pickup line. Anyway.
He was worried about other things.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, good stuff.
So during their get-to-know-each-other session, they come upon a Fire Nation Navy ship. It's forbidden for anyone to go onto this ship. It brings up a lot of bad trauma from when the Fire Nation attacked. And, you know, Aang is just kind of figuring out that he missed all this history. He says, I had friends who were in the Fire Nation. Like, he doesn't really understand what could have possibly happened here. And just as he's coming to that conclusion, they set off a flare. Accidentally, and that flare shows Zuko where they are, and that's how the episode ends. Zuko identifies them, and then he's, you know, on his way because of honor
to find the Avatar because of honor. Sky, man, so much. So we're going to switch up our format a little bit, and we're going to cover, you know, more than just one episode, since these are, you know, smaller episodes than what we normally cover. So let's go into episode 2, The Avatar Returns. So Aang and Katara return to the village where everyone is upset because they set off the flare. Basically, after quite an argument, even Grand's getting in on this. She's not feeling it, right?
And her Katara was like, grandmother, please defend me. And she was like, nah.
And she's like, nah. No, yeah, you're violated. You're doing too much, okay? Get your hormones in check, all right? Here we go. So after the argument, Aang agrees that he should leave. He doesn't want to have Katara choose between her and him and her village, right? So he's basically, you know, does the honorable thing and he's going to leave. As Sokka basically prepares, in air quotes, the defenses, we're talking like little kids and stuff. It's just the Fire Nation is going to approach. They're approaching. And Sokka's basically alone. No one can say he's not brave, because he definitely goes for it. Skilled is another conversation. Brave, yes, for sure. So Zuko makes his grand appearance. You know, he's, you know,
eye roll emoji. I mean, yeah. He just was like, ugh, I'm the prince of the Fire Nation. Like, it was a little much. It was a bit extra.
It was extra. It kind of reminded me, like, of if you ever watch WWE, like, the most anticlimactic ring walk ever. Like, right? It wasn't really that good. So we're just going to roll our eyes right now at Zuko. And, you know, basically, Sokka comes running at him, and he just gets wrecked. He's wrecked without even breaking a sweat. You know, Zuko's like, eh, be gone. You know what I mean? So he keeps coming. But at this point, he demands to know where the Avatar is. Zuko does. He wants to know, where is this guy? I'm looking for him. I need to find the Avatar. And he thinks that the Avatar should be 100 years old because it's been a minute, like his grandfather, his grandfather's grandfather, everyone that he's ever known in his whole lineage has been looking for this guy. And Aang returns and reveals himself as the Avatar. And Zuko's out here talking trash. You're just a kid. You're just a teenager. Who are you? You're not the Avatar. And without fighting Zuko, Aang agrees to go with them to spare the village, which again showed you how honorable Aang is, that he's just like, you know what? These people don't deserve to be wrapped up in this. I don't really even truly know why you want to capture me, but cool, I'll go. Just so to spare them. And then Sokka and Katara agree that they need to go after Aang. And with the approval of Grand Grand, who tells them that their destinies are intertwined with the Avatars, they go after him. Really, really great stuff.
I also just love that you're calling her Grand Grand.
I mean, it's great. Come on.
It warms my heart. It does.
I feel like she's all of our grand-grands. And it's also, like, endearing to me because my kids actually called my grandmother grand-grand, like, because she was, like, you know, the great-grandmother. Yeah. So it's really cool.
Yeah,
it's
she's
really
a awesome family matriarch, for sure.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So Aang doesn't seem to need much help. He quickly escapes from the guards. Basically, the firebenders are... what's the word? It's weak. They're weak. They're not very good at what they're doing. And compared to Aang's mastery of airbending, the firebenders really don't have a chance. But Zuko is also a very skilled firebender and evenly matches with Aang. So Zuko manages to knock Aang overboard as he sinks into the ocean. He manages to channel power and waterbend his way back onto the ship.
And it's awesome. Like, he's just, Aang just, like, is so good. He's so powerful, and he doesn't even know it at first. It's just, like, a really impressive display.
Yeah. And it was, so I have a question about it. I was a little bit, like, unsure. Did he waterbend in that moment intuitively, or did he airbend underneath the water, which then projected the water? Like, I just was unclear of what bending skill he was using.
Oh, that's
know?
A really good point. I assumed it was waterbending. But you have a good point. He could be channeling airbending, which is what he was doing on the ship.
Yeah.
I would have to watch it again. But I just sort of assumed it was waterbending.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that it was like an intuitive thing. I landed on a spot of, man, intuitively, he's already able to waterbend, even though he doesn't realize that's what he's doing. That's where I landed too. But it's just an interesting thing that, like, that he is exhibiting that he is skilled, right? That he can do these things almost naturally that other people have to work really hard to do.
Right. So, yeah, we see that Katara is a very powerful waterbender, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's able to essentially break that iceberg with her just by being angry, but just by channeling energy. But she's still not skilled because she hasn't had any training. So it seems like Aang is able to do this. He has an ability, but maybe just not the training. So yeah, I'm gonna look at it again, but I'm pretty sure he was waterbending.
It's awesome. So Sokka finally gets Appa to fly by saying the appropriate words. Yip yip, my favorite too. Let's go. And arrives with Katara just in time to see Aang's incredible waterbending trick. The trio escapes, and Katara asks him how he did the trick. Aang says he doesn't know. He just did it. So there we go, right? He's like saying, my innate ability just allowed me to do that. And they decide to head to the North Pole so he can learn how to master waterbending. And away they are on their journey together. But Aang wants to take a few detours along the way, And that's going to end episode 2.
Our next episode is episode 3, The Southern Air Temple. We start the episode with Zuko and his uncle Iroh sailing to a port to get their ship repaired. Because, you know, Aang and company wrecked it.
Yeah, good job. Well done. Yeah,
well done. They're confronted by Commander Zhao, who seems like a kind of slithery character. I don't really know what his deal is. Nobody seems to like him. Zuko wants to keep the truth about the Avatar's return secret from everyone. But his secret is quickly discovered when Zhao's men interrogate the sailors on Zuko's ship and find out that the Avatar has returned. Meanwhile, Katara, Sokka, and Aang travel on Appa to the Southern Air Temple, which is where Aang is from.
Katara, homecoming.
Yeah, I was like kind of excited for him, and then things got dark pretty quickly.
It did. Oh my goodness.
Katara tries to prepare Aang, you know, that the Fire Nation probably killed everybody because there's no more airbenders. So she's basically like, let's be realistic. This could be difficult. Mm-hmm. And she's right. When they get there, the whole island, I guess it's not really an island. It's like sort of like a floating mountain. Mm-hmm. When they arrive, no one's there. It's beautiful, but it's deserted.
Like, let's talk about that first. I mean, it's breathtaking. Like, especially for an animation, you just look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, this was amazing. And you can feel like the legacy. Like, and when they're pulling up, you're like, oh wow, this was really something when everyone was here and everything was like the way that it used to be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are multiple flashback scenes in this episode that are just stunning. Like, it makes you really mourn for what is lost because it's stunning and beautiful and it looks like a very peaceful society. Mm-hmm. And so Katara sort of prepared him, but Aang was in denial, which is understandable because to him, it's only been a few days, right? But to the rest of us, it's been, for the story, it's been 100 years. So Aang kind of takes it in the scene and he's showing his friends around the island. I mean, the temple. Mm-hmm. And they play a little game of airball, which was really cool.
Very cute.
Sokka obviously gets wrecked because Aang knows how to play and is an airbender.
Sokka's just not very good at these things. He's not good. Poor Sokka.
Well, he's never played before. Plus, like, Aang is literally, like, has superpower. This is not a game designed for mere mortals.
Yeah.
And then they head to the temple where they see a statue of the monk Gyatso, who was Aang's mentor, and Aang describes him as the greatest airbender in the world.
Yeah.
In a flashback, we see that Aang had reservations about being the Avatar, but was told by Gyatso that once he was old enough to enter the Air Temple, he would meet his guide. We also get a glimpse of just like how beautiful everything was before the war. And we see where Aang gets his sense of humor. He and Gyatso launch a bunch of cakes at some meditating monks nearby.
I love that. You know what it is that there's a playfulness in Aang that we see, you know, in these first three episodes. And to get like it, to see the origin of like this very serious task, but to have a levity and like a joy in your heart, even though your task was saving the world, like not like a small task, your task was saving the world. And you still have a mentor who is teaching you that even with that, you need to have fun. And that it's beautiful. It's a beautiful way to show it.
Oh, yeah. I thought this was awesome. Like the flash, it just, Aang, for someone who's literally carrying the weight of the world on him, like, can you imagine having more responsibility?
Yeah.
Is really playful and young and immature, which can kind of get irritating. Mm-hmm. But also, that's how he is. Like, that's part of his personality. It's part of his coping as well to find joy. So I liked this scene a lot. Aang enters the Air Temple by airbending, which was pretty cool to see how the door to the Air Temple unlocked. Mm-hmm. And inside the temple are statues of all the previous avatars, which are also the previous lives of Aang.
Mm-hmm.
He comes across Avatar Roku, who was a firebender, and this little glint of magic shows in, as the statue's eyes are illuminated, and Aang feels a connection right away. They are interrupted, however, when someone enters the temple, and it turns out that it's a lemur.
And not just any lemur. Apparently a lemur that Sokka's going to want to try to eat. All right?
Yeah. Sokka's like, good, I'm hungry. Let's catch it. It's so funny. He like immediately like is like food.
Yeah.
Aang is like, oh, adorable. And so they both go after the lemur and chase it. And they come upon the skeleton of Gyatso surrounded by dead Fire Nation soldiers. Apparently, Gyatso, before he died, just murked everybody. Just took out. He was not going out without killing them all.
He's a G. No, he's definitely a strong, powerful airbender. Like, it's so amazing to see. Yeah, he was like, yeah, I'm not going out to fight. Yeah, awesome stuff. Awesome. So, I mean, sad to see him, sad moment to see that he eventually, you know, lost. I mean, ultimately, but, you know, that he fought to the end and fought bravely. I mean, from what we're learning of this character, it's obviously that was going to be the case, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, this whole episode during their time at the air temple, they've been like trying, Katara and Sokka have been trying to shield Aang from what they know was obviously carnage. And here he's come upon it. It's really painful because this was his mentor, somebody he loved as a father figure. And there's his skeleton basically. Yeah. He knows that he went out in a violent state. And this is, this moment is really difficult for Aang, and he immediately, like, his avatar state, which is when he's most powerful, is activated. Mm. And he's basically, it's like he's having an out-of-body experience. He flies into a rage. He can't control his powers, but he's at his most powerful state. Mm-hmm. And Katara manages to calm him down by promising that they're going to stay with him, reminding him that he's not alone, even though I'm sure in that moment he felt really alone.
And that's a little bit, I don't know, but to me that felt like a little bit of a nod that what, you know, Gran was saying about them, their destinies being intertwined with Aang's, that it was like kind of a nod to like, oh, wow, we see that Katara just communicating that in her voice and saying what she's saying is helping him to navigate a moment where he's like pretty out of control. He was gonna, you know, he didn't know how to control what he was feeling and what was going on. And so it shows that they're there, like, you know, helping him and shepherding him through this life that he's like incarnated in. So it's really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really like about this show in the beginning is how they handle trauma. Mm-hmm. And trauma is a difficult thing for children to understand. And what I love about it is that Aang has a reaction that's very understandable. He's going through grief and trauma all at once. And he behaves in a way that is, you know, scary. It scares mm-hmm. everyone. But he's able to recover from it with understanding and love from his friends. And I loved that right away. I was like, okay, this is his family now.
Yep.
So going back to our friends of the Fire Nation, Zuko.
Prince Zuko.
And his honor.
Love Iroh, even though he's on the other team. I love Iroh, man.
Iroh's the best. I love him. But Zuko is, you know, obviously concerned about his honor and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And Commander Zhao and him get into an argument, and Zhao just reads him for filth. Like, it's like, your father doesn't care about you. You're trash. Like, you don't have no honor. Nobody cares. Like, he just goes off.
Yeah.
Zuko, because he's a hothead, is like, I would like to have a duel.
Yeah.
And surprisingly wins. I was ready for Zuko to be washed.
Me too. But he's got skills. Like, this is where you see, yo, I was like, okay, Zuko, you're biting off more than you can handle. And then he wrecks this dude. Like, it was like, wow, he's really that guy. Okay, we have a formidable foe. There it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he was really, I was really impressed. Yeah. He does spare Zhao's life, but then he is attacked from behind and his uncle saves him. Ew. And calls Zhao disgraceful.
Yeah, he is a disgrace. That is disgraceful. He was going to kill a little kid by shooting him in the back with fire. Not like, and after the guy shoots the fair one with him, let's shoot the fair one. He took an L, and then even though he could have wrecked him and killed him, he was like, nah, I'm not going to, because that's not what I'm here to do. And he walks away, taking the high road. Here comes this guy again, like trying to let you see Zhao for what the piece of shit that he is, pretty much.
Yeah.
He's terrible.
He's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, you know, back at the Air Temple, the lemur joins our gang. And he's named Momo.
Momo.
I love him.
Oh, I love Momo.
And Aang is finally realizing that he is the last airbender and that his people have totally been wiped out. And the episode kind of closes with him understanding that.
Yeah. Sobering, for sure. Sobering reality, for sure. So that takes us to the last episode we're going to cover in our first episode on this, and then we'll get into more analysis. It's episode 4 is the Warriors of Kyoshi. As usual, Zuko is being a brat and flies into a rage because, you know, his uncle reports they can't find the Avatar. You know, that's what it is. And of course, Zuko's pissed off about that. And after their departure from the Southern Air Temple, Team Avatar ends up on an island. Aang is showing off by surfing on a fish, a giant sea creature that spooks him. And just as they're preparing to depart, they're ambushed by Kyoshi warriors. So the warriors are all women modeled after Avatar Kyoshi, who was the Avatar prior to Avatar Roku.
And I love her. I don't even know anything about her. And I'm like, yes.
Yes. Strong. Like, you can see it right away. And of course, you know, like, they show up, they surround them, and you know, they capture them, basically. The news of Team Avatar's presence makes it back to Zuko. And the people of Kyoshi, especially the young girls, treat Aang like a celebrity as soon as they realize he's the Avatar.
It's really cute and funny. Yeah, they immediately become like hordes of little girls following him around, being so excited about him. It's great.
Kind of like NSYNC showed up to the Kyoshi village. Would that be it?
Why are you bringing up old stuff? Where is NSYNC now? Broken up. Backstreet's still around.
Oh, that's right.
Just putting that out there.
That's right. He didn't bring his whole band. He just came himself. That is Avatar. The Avatar is Justin Timberlake himself. Shows up. All of them go crazy. No, that's funny. I couldn't help myself. So anyway, so they show up. The little girls are going crazy over the Avatar. And at that point, you know, I gotta say that our girl Katara's a little salty. She gets a little bit salty about what's going on. Maybe,
well,
you know,
he starts to flex. Here's my thing. Like, Katara's like, we have stuff to do.
Yeah.
And Aang is like, let me show you how I can do this trick and that trick and have these little girls follow me around and give me the attention I so desperately needed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's out here, but you know, he's out here trying to impress everybody. And meanwhile, Sokka is thinking that he's, you know, hot shit, and he's trying to show off and you know, act like he's a real warrior with the Kyoshi warriors. He's not there yet, and he gets wrecked. I mean, he realizes eventually that maybe I should learn from them because they're obviously better warriors than me. And he asks their leader, a teenage girl named Suki, if she can train him, which was cool. I'm glad that he finally found some humility and just took that training, because he wasn't gonna win that one. So Aang's newfound fame, it's, as we mentioned, rubbing Katara the wrong way for multiple reasons, and the two of them have a huge argument over it. Aang decides to show off for the villagers and ride the Unagi. the sea creature that spooked him early in the beginning of the episode, which is basically looks like a water dragon. And he's quickly overwhelmed by the beast, and Katara swims out to rescue him, risking her own life. I mean, this is like real dedication and love. You can see.
These two are so dedicated to him and so brave. Like, I Team Avatar is just the best.
I love them. And so then, just then, in that moment, Zuko arrives. Of course, because his destiny and his honor and his, you know, all that. And the Fire Nation is searching the village. Suki and Sokka take on Zuko, and just then, Aang comes in and bests him. Aang flies over the village and sees the destruction that the Fire Nation leaves in its wake. He's saddened by that.
Yeah, and, it's pretty... We need to see this, right? Because all we've seen previously is what's left after the Fire Nation has already come through, and people have either started rebuilding or, you know, like it's over. We need to see what the Fire Nation does when they're actively in a battle. And it was horrible.
Yeah. And it raises the stakes. Like you said, we need to see what are the stakes? What are they really fighting against? What is the Fire Nation willing to do? And you know, I love that they kind of touch on yes, we're making a joke about the young girls following him around and all of that, but some of it is because the spirit that is the same as, you know, the person who's the founder of their village, who was once the Avatar, is also the same spirit that's inside him. So it's like so they're like, he's like, he doesn't want to leave this place because it's familiar to him, which is something that this show does so well. Touching on of this idea of reincarnation and the familial the familiar things that happen when you have multiple lives and your spirit. It's really cool. I enjoyed that aspect of the show, and it's really clear to me that they're kind of, some of the sadness as he's sailing over the village is because truly in one of his lifetimes that was his village, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really cool. So Team Avatar decides to leave so that Zuko will follow them and not keep terrorizing the village. And Sokka and Suki, they share a kiss. I'm a warrior, but I'm
a girl
too.
I'm a girl too. Yeah. It's so cute. I was so like, good. I love it.
It was good. It was so good. Oh my gosh.
The way she said it too, it was so cute. She's like, I am a warrior, but I'm a girl too. It was just adorable. I love her.
Oh, it was great. She's awesome. She's really awesome. And so... just before they leave, Aang rides the Unagi and gets it to put out the fires that basically were blazing through the village, and by raining down water on the village, which was really, really awesome. And that is where that episode ends, allowing them to save the village. And it was, you know, this block of episodes, we're going to talk about some of the themes and some of the stuff that really stood out to us because, you know, it was our first time watching this show, and it was awesome. It was like a good place in, you know, a quarter to stop and kind of think about, well, what are we experiencing?
Yeah, so the themes that stuck out to me first and foremost were the imperialism and the and how it destroys culture. So the destruction of the very fabric of who the water tribes, the air nomads, and the earth kingdom are. You know, their very identity has been crushed by the aggression of the Fire Nation. Even when they arrive to an island that has been entirely neutral, they leave it in ruins. The Fire Nation is just like, I don't know. It's I'm just gonna go ahead and call it, they're trash.
Yeah.
Trash. Yeah. But the way that the show is demonstrating that imperialism also leads to the destruction of families and the separation of families. You know, Sokka and Katara's entire village has really been impacted. There's so few of them, in part because of the Fire Nation's aggression on them. And none of the men are there because they had to go to war. It's just, I thought the show did a really good job of showing that in order to take over the world, the Fire Nation had to destroy a lot of it.
But and the thing that's interesting, I think, based on what you're saying, is the coming at it from a different vantage point with the Fire Nation's concern is they also had to destroy elements of themselves. Like, right? We learn in one of the episodes here that Avatar Roku was, he was in the Fire Nation, and that was the last incarnation of the Avatar, and before Aang. And we also know, if you look at it, like, you know, yeah, there's elements to Iroh that is like super jovial and fun and this and that. And there's things that you can see that, like, there's elements, like every element is necessary. And that was why there was harmony, because there was peace among the different elements and the different tribes. But they're not only destroying these other nations through imperialism, they're also destroying themselves, which is basically, as you know, where I feel the nature of imperialism and colonialism is, you think you're oppressing someone else, but you're also oppressing yourself, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree.
So then there's like prejudice and bias. And right at the top, you know, of the whole thing, obviously there's a lot of gender bias. You know, Zuko is clearly embracing the patriarchy.
Boo.
definitely. That you can see that right away. But, you know, he abandons it like a lot of men will do when a feminist wins their heart, right? So, like, he has fallen in love with this soldier and has, you know, strong feelings for her anyway. And all of a sudden now it's like, oh, wait, like, I get it. I need to, like, you know, not try to fight against the fact that, you know, there's a warrior that's as strong as me, that's a woman. I can learn from that. So that's good. It's showing that Sokka has the ability to stretch himself and learn, which I really like. And then additionally, nearly everyone underestimates Aang's power, his ability, his courage. And that's all based on his age, right? They're all looking at, there's a kid in front of me. How can this kid be the Avatar? Which, you know, shows you a lot about how we misjudge the strengths and the abilities of children and what they're able to do. And sometimes that can hurt us. Not only it hurts us in the long run, like, you know, as they start to grow and come into their own, and also can hurt the kid, right? If they don't have like a sense of like being empowered into who they are. So that's really clear that there's some bias around ageism in this world, in some ways.
Yeah, you actually see it in future episodes too, where like someone who's old is underestimated because they're older.
Yep.
That's a bias too. Underestimating people because of their age is definitely something that we do in society, but is on display here in the show.
Yeah. So in a way, the show demonstrates that prejudice and bias are not only bad for the oppressed, but also puts the oppressor at a disadvantage and narrows their worldview. And that's really a strong point that we're seeing as a theme inside of these first four episodes. And I'm sure some of those will continue throughout the series.
And the final theme that we drew from this this block of episodes was family. In many ways, the first few episodes are modeling what it means to be family. Katara and Sokka quickly adopt Aang as their little brother. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect demonstration of the idea of the family that we choose. Mm-hmm. Zuko and Iroh are also family. And despite his exile and his brattiness, Zuko's uncle always stays by his side to protect him and coach him. And it's really nice to see that the family bonds exist on both of the sides, right? It's on both the antagonist side, but also on the protagonist and the hero side.
Yeah, I like that. And it's, you know, really cool to see that these themes like kind of played out. And they're, you know, what's interesting is when you first look at it, you say, oh, it's a cartoon. But the reality of it is it's more, there's so much inside of it that actually is just, I mean, that's why it ages well, because these themes are universal themes and they're things that really you could take apart in a lot of different series. And I'm so glad that we dug into this because, you know, I'm learning a lot, which, and experiencing a lot through watching it. So let's talk about that. What are some of the things we learned in this block of episodes that really stood out to you?
So, I mean, I think the first thing was the world building around bending. I was really surprised by some of it. I mean, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the show is new to us in that we haven't watched it before, but it's not new to us in terms of knowing what it is. I've been hearing about this show for the last decade. Mm-hmm. And I had always assumed that all of the characters were benders. But no, they're not. Bending is not a super common skill to have or ability. And so I found that really fascinating. Like, not everyone can bend. Yeah. But also just that it's the ability to manipulate an element, to control fire, water, air, or the earth. But it has limitations, right? It's not, you can't just do it unlimited. Like, there is energy that goes into it. There's practice that goes into it and skill. People are, I believe, from what we've seen so far, people are born with the ability to bend, but they also have to learn how to do it. It's dependent on their mind and their body. And like, just doing a simple hand movement doesn't mean that you can do it. Your intention has to be, is important as well.
Yeah, there's like a certain, like, the, it's interesting because not every member of a tribe or a nation can bend, right? So like, we see that Katara is a waterbender, but Sokka is not. And that is really, that's really great also to couple that with, yes, you may be born with innate abilities, but you still have to hone those innate abilities and work for the mastery of it. As you can see, they're on their way to find a waterbending master. That's where they're, that's where the journey they've set off to meet to do, so that they could figure out how to like take, so Katara can learn and so he can learn. And obviously the Avatar has to learn every element, but she really is, has the innate skill, but still needs to learn how to use that and channel it, because, you know, just being skilled, you know, as they say, as one of my favorite sayings is, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work. And that's the realities that they're facing. It's like, I may have these skills, but I need to learn how to use them.
Yeah.
So
entirely. And so also we learned a bit about the legend behind the Avatar. So the Avatar has to master all of the elements. So we know that Aang is already a skilled airbender, but he has to learn water, then earth, and then finally fire. So we know out the gate that in order for him to really embody the Avatar, those are the skills that he needs to build and he needs to learn it. And we're basically going to be on this journey with him as he becomes a master bender in all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we also see that Zuko had a dispute with his father. And so we know that, you know, well, we don't know all the details of that, but we do know that it had him fall out enough that he feels like he has to capture the Avatar and has been looking for 2 years. So, you know, Iroh's kind of stand up, in my opinion, his uncle, because, you know, he's gone into exile with his nephew, even knowing that he's like been, you know, disgraced and pushed out. He could have stayed, I'm sure, in the Fire Nation and been, you know, he's a general, former general, we know that. But he decided, I'm going to go with my nephew and make sure that he's safe, which, you know, endears me to him a little bit. But yeah, we do. We also learn that the Fire Lord is not happy with his son. So,
yeah. And I can't wait to meet the Fire Lord.
That's, yeah, me
like,
neither.
He I'm seems looking. Like a tough guy.
Yeah, I mean, if Zuko is any indication, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, like, your son is awful.
He's so awful. Awful. Like, super awful. So, you know, what are some of your closing thoughts? What are some of the things? What did you want to close out with? Or what did you like? What did you question? What are some of the things that you're thinking about?
I loved a lot of it. I actually think that this is a show that really becomes better with each watch of each episode. I liked the pilot episode more when I watched it a couple of times. They really do a great job of sort of mastering the narrative from the beginning. So as we work through the show, it'll be interesting to see like little hints and characters that come back. I liked a lot of that. I would like to see more bending because it's really cool. The animation is legit. And I mean, the only thing that I question so far is like how much of Aang's immaturity is going to hold him back. Aang is very immature. Like, I mean, I lose my patience with him all the time. Like, it's the amount of times that Aang is like doing something he shouldn't be doing, and Katara is like, can you bring it back. Yeah. Like we have a mission here.
Yeah.
Is humorous, but also I'm just like, oh my God, like the stress of watching these kids move through the world with all of this, like all of this danger. It can be a bit stressful when yeah. Aang is like not focused. But I just want to say finally that Zuko really stands out to me as a perfect stand-in for every terrible stereotype about millennials.
All right, do tell. Do expand, please. Please expand on this.
Zuko is overconfident.
Okay.
He thinks that, like, he's the master of the world, even though, like, a 12-year-old boy kicks his ass in the first, like, in the very first episode, I believe.
But can we stop there just right there at those two? I know you're going to keep going with this, but I'm just going to say the fact that Aang kicked his ass and then Zuko just washed Zhao, like washed him, right? Like Zhao is pretty trash. Like how does this guy have so much respect? Because like he got washed by Zuko and Aang, like, I mean, yes, Aang is the most powerful being probably in this world, but it's pretty hilarious that Zuko, although he's like self-obsessed and not that and got beat up, he still could beat up a grown-ass man. So anyway,
It's true. It's true. He's also spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Self-obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
Righteous. And holding on to all of his deep past traumas. I'm a millennial, so I don't want anyone to take this the wrong way. But this is essentially what boomers think of us. He's just like a perfect, he's a cartoonish character about millennials. That's my theory. I'm going with it.
All right. I mean, we'll see how this develops, but I won't. Oh man. Maybe some of the millennials want to reach out and tell us if you guys co-sign some of the other ones we'll see how it goes.
The bad stereotypes, not like the truth. These are stereotypes.
These are stereotypes. Yeah, for sure.
I'm not saying this is how millennials really are. I would argue that actually millennials are the opposite of this many, many times and have just been through a lot more than other generations in some ways, but that's all. I'm done talking about millennials.
Well, no, I mean, there is a correlation here because, like, here is this kid who's been, you know, kind of pushed out by his dad who, you know, treats him like he is those things that you're talking about. He's no good. He's not, like, so the dad is like the embodiment of like how people treat those kids. And then, I don't know, in our world, we've only been through like two major recessions and a freaking global pandemic. So maybe millennials have a reason to be a little bit of like a little salty. Like the world is not what we like told them it was. So, I'm like at the tail end. I'm in the beginning of this whole thing with the millennials. I'm a little bit before millennials, not that far. I'm like right on the inkling. So, you know, what am I, Generation X?
Yeah, you're a Gen Xer.
Yeah, I'm a Gen Xer. So, like, so that's fine. But the reality of it is that, like there's a correlation between Zuko and, like, what, you know, people that would be in his age group right now, which are a lot of the people who age with this series, would be feeling based on what they've had to go through in the world and kind of feeling, I want to say exiled, but feeling like, you know, they've been thrust with a lot of things that other generations haven't had to face, and it's like their responsibility to like figure out how to fix it because we'll all be gone by the time they're up, you know? So good analogy, I'm going to say, by you. I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like it. I guess what I like is I like this world so far because I like that it has embraced some things that are near and dear to my heart. Metaphysics, spirituality, the elements in nature, things that I like, the martial energy, like even though it's like, you know, martial arts, but like really beyond just martial arts, this idea of tribalism and how coexistence is really important, not just like one specific thing being better than the other and how all these things balance each other out. So these ideas are big, big, big ideas. And I love a world that's trying to explore them and explore them in an animated world, in a world that was really supposed to be accessible to young people And also, obviously, it's grown, right? And like those younger people became older, and then it's the series, like a Star Wars or something, is passing along throughout multi-generational conversations around these topics. And so I really love that. That's a real, I love that part of it. I question, you know, I question why we, I question a couple things. One of the major questions I had coming out of this from episode one and just everything they're saying, and then episode two, and then going and us finding out about Avatar Roku, is if the Airbender disappeared, how did they know when he returned in Aang's body? And what is their explanation for understanding that the actual, that Roku had died? Like, how do they know? He just vanished, right? Is what Katara says in her explanation. So I'm questioning, like, kind of like the timing of when he stopped being Roku and started becoming Aang. I'd like to know more about that questioning. And I guess what I want to see more of is that I want to see more of, like, the metaphysical elements in the story, which I have a good inkling that we will.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most interesting part of the story is just this, the metaphysical elements are just like, it's an interesting concept, especially to introduce to children. So I like that they've done it so well, in this world in general, and it continues to build on itself. This show is really scaffolded, you know, the common term that teachers use, but they tell us something that reveals something, and then we learn about that more, and then they move on to the next thing. So the story really builds on itself. I really enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, that's going to do it. I think that you know, we're really excited to be back, and we hope that you will check out, you know, we've actually expanded here with kinfolklore.com has been launched. We have an Instagram profile, Kin Folklore Pod. Also, that's the same on Twitter. And you know, you can catch up on our Facebook page. And so we just appreciate you guys coming back. We're super excited to be podcasting Avatar The Last Airbender. And it's, you know, it's a story that we're finding a lot of joy in, especially in this time that we're all experiencing through us. So thank you for taking the time and being with us. And yeah, we're looking forward to this journey.
Yeah, and if you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, please feel free to check out the shows that we previously podcasted, which was His Dark Materials for our first season and The Witcher for our second season. We're really looking forward to doing this with you, so thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
See you next week. 5-star comments! Ratings! Go click!